This is the EWN Radio Network.
This is Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Close Up. I am Phyllis Smith. So, sales. For some entrepreneurs, that is a dirty five-letter word. But if you want to own your own business, sales is the foundation from which you create revenue. And without revenue, you have no business. So I am so excited to introduce you to a master of sales. Her name is Stephanie Chung. Stephanie offers sales coaching, strategic advising, and executive mentoring services nationwide, focusing on shaping her clients into exclusive owners of the high-ticket sales marketplace. As a senior sales executive in the aviation and private jet industry, Stephanie mastered the art of high-ticket selling and has successfully elevated clients into the select tier of the highest paid and truly elite sales professionals in the United States. Stephanie has worked with executives from United Airlines, Disney, NetJets, and Learjet, to name a few. So I am so excited to bring Stephanie to you. Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Phyllis.
So, you know, I mentioned your clients include executives and small business owners as well, and you have sold jets to corporations, very rich people. But my question is, are the basic principles of sales the same for all of your prospects, or are they different depending on the size of the company or the amount of money in their bank account?
That's a great question. So the principles are the exact same. Now, the strategies may be a little bit different, but the foundation of sales is the same whether you're selling a $2 widget or a $20 million aircraft and then everything in between. So the process is exactly the same.
So, Stephanie, give us five basic principles for effective sales.
Absolutely. So the very first principle is you have to know your product. And that goes without saying, but you'd be surprised, right? You have to know every single nook and cranny about your product. You have to also know your competitor's product equally or even more than you know your own product. So you must know your competitor's product. You have to know how to sell to different people differently, right? No longer the one size fits all. Everyone's different. Every buyer is different. So you have to understand the buying behaviors and be able to sell to different people differently. You've got to become a master at active listening, And there's three different steps of listening, but you have to master active listening. And then the last one that I absolutely love is that you must become obsessed with asking yourself, so what? So what?
So when you say so what, okay, what do you mean by that?
So what? You know, it's interesting. What happens is a lot of times as sales professionals, we get almost too high on our own product, right? It's important to love your product, but it's really more important to be about the buyer sitting in front of you. And so one of the things that I have taught everyone who's ever I've ever led or coached or developed really become focused on asking the question, so what? And you're not asking the buyer, so what? You're asking yourself, so what? So before you jump into your features and benefits and value proposition and all that, you really have to become obsessed with asking yourself, and it's a discipline issue, so what? Why would this person sit in front of me? Why do they care? And so when we become about the buyer in front of us, we then, and knowing that every single buyer, doesn't matter what it is that you're selling, whether it's a product or a service, every single buyer is asking the same question, and they're asking themselves this question: what can your product or your service do for me that's going to make my life or my job easier? That's all the buyer really cares about. And so when we ask ourselves, so what, as we're going through why they should consider our product or our service, the discipline of asking so what is huge. And it really comes down to, why would they care? Why does this matter to them? And that is then how you present your product and or your service. Mm. And if you don't mind, I'll dive a little bit deeper into
yes,
that.
Yes, please.
You know, I see that. Let's say, you know, I'm a woman, you're a woman. We think about commercials, right? And I see skincare products do this every single day. And they'll get on the commercial and they'll say, you know, this skincare has vitamins A, C, and K. And, you know, and as a buyer, I'm thinking, okay, so what though? That's great. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Unless I've gone to med school, I don't really know what that means, right? Or they may say, you know, full of peptides and anti-aging. When it's all said and done, really what we want to know is, will this get rid of my wrinkles, right?
Right.
Will this, you know, give me a great complexion? So as sales folks, what we have to do is really be disciplined to talk in terms of the buyer, not so much just rattling off our features and benefits. And when I was in the private aviation industry, I had done a meeting with one of my sales directors. He reported in to me, and the two of us decided to do a joint sales call together. And so we were meeting with a husband and wife couple, and my sales director, the gentleman, he and the husband just connected. And so they were talking about the plane and, you know, how far the plane flew and how fast the plane would fly and that the engines had an F-16, you know, heritage. And they just went on and on and on about the features and benefits of the plane. And they were both, it was an engaging conversation. They were both excited and, you know, you could just feel, you know, the energy, right? But what was interesting is I was sitting there and I was observing the wife. She was not engaged in the conversation. She was sitting there politely, but she wasn't engaged. And I said to her, I said, Ann, may I ask, what is it that's important for you in terms of looking at a small jet? And so she said, and I'll never forget this, she said, I just want to make sure that the lavatory or bathroom has a door and not a curtain. And so just a side note, Phyllis, when in the private jet industry, small jets may or may not have a bathroom. So she wanted to make sure, one, it had a bathroom. And if they have a bathroom, it may have a curtain versus a door. So she wanted to make sure it had a door versus a curtain. That was a profound point of how she didn't care about the F-16 engine. She didn't care about how fast it flew. She didn't care about how far it flew, how many seats. She didn't care about any of that stuff that was literally being discussed. She cared about, does the bathroom have a door, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's another great example of how as sales professionals, we have to always be about the buyer in front of us. What is it that they care about? And that's the only thing we talk about, right, is really how it pertains to them. And all buyers are asking, how will your product and or service make my life or job easier? That's the question.
Yeah. And this also goes back to one of your basic principles is being an active listener, how important, a master of active listening, because you had to turn your attention away from that sort of testosterone-filled conversation. And you had to actively notice there was somebody else in the room who was going to help make that decision.
Exactly. I was just going to say that when you think of active listening, and, you know, unfortunately, in our society, active listening truly all within itself is a art form and a training that you have to get very familiar with. And as sales professionals, which you and I know everybody listening to this is a sales professional, right? Even if you're a stay-at-home mom, you're selling to your kids, they got to eat their spinach. So
right,
we're all salespeople in life. And active listening is different than other forms of listening. And so if you don't mind, I'll just elaborate on that for just a second.
Yes, please.
There's really three different forms of listening. And so the first form is, you know, multitasking. And we all do it. We're driving somewhere. We've got our radio on. We're driving. We may, you know, be looking at signs and listening to MapQuest. So we're listening, but we're multitasking. There's a lot of other things going on as well. That's one form of listening. And unfortunately, that's the majority of how we listen these days. But then there's another form of listening, which is really being focused, right? So all of a sudden, you're not doing a lot of different things. You may be focused on the person in front of you, but you're not just 100% listening to what they're saying. So for an example, if you and I were sitting in the same office, I may be looking at you and just focusing on you, but I also could be looking to say, oh, wow, that's an interesting picture on her desk. I wonder if that's her kids or, you know, that's a cute shirt she's got on. So though I'm 100% focused on you, I'm actually listening to you, but I'm observing other things that pertain to you. So that's what's called being focused. But active listening is I'm sitting across from you, or I'm on the phone with you, or, you know, in this case, we're on a broadcast together. Active listening means that you're 100% only focused in on what the person is saying and the essence of what they're saying, meaning you're engaged. You're watching body language. You're listening to, you know, how the voice inflections go up or down. Maybe perhaps if there's any gestures in their face, if their eyes, you know, you're watching their entire body language, and you're bringing that together, if you will, with what they're saying. So ultimately, it's not just hearing them, but it's visually watching their cues as well. So that's how you actively listen. You are 100% all sensors are engaged in what they're saying and the essence of what they're saying.
I think what's also important about that is going back to when you're a salesperson, it's so what, you know, it's what is you're playing to your client. What do they need? And if you are, if you're not actively listening, like, for example, you could be listening, like the number two of the three, where you're listening, but you're observing other things. If you're engaged in a conversation and you're thinking about, I got to make the sale, I got to make my budget, I've got to make my quota or whatever it is, if you are thinking about that, you're not actively listening. You're in that that tier two. What ultimately happens generally in your experience when you're at tier two, level two, as opposed to level three, where you're listening, but you're kind of thinking, your head is thinking about other things?
What tends to happen, and this is the norm, right? And so, and really what it should be is, to your point, level three. When we're actively listening, it makes sales so much easier. Part of the dilemma that we have as sales professionals is a lot of times there's a stigma, right? So people don't think that they can sell, or they don't want to be a salesperson because they don't want to be, quote-unquote, the pushy salesperson. And the reality is, when you're actively listening, and this is how you eliminate ever wanting to be a pushy, ever becoming a pushy salesperson, is by actively listening. Because when you're actively listening, that alone means that you don't have to worry about what's my next question going to be, so that I can say this, so that they can say that, so that I can get the sale, which is really manipulation, right? When you're actively listening, you, believe it or not, the buyer will help guide the conversation on what you should ask next. And it just makes it so much easier, because when you're truly listening to what the buyer has to say, they're going to talk about things, and it's going to, just by natural, you know, our natural instinct, you will then ask the next question. You may ask the question because you need them to clarify it, perhaps. You may ask the next question because it's a normal flow of where the questioning should go. But, you know, the biggest way to alleviate the pressure that people have on being a quote-unquote salesperson is to truly actively listen. You actively listen to the buyer in front of you, and they will guide you as to where the next question should go. And believe it or not, when you do it very well, they'll actually guide themselves to the close, right? So that's a whole different session.
Right.
But ultimately, it really does matter. If you've got the pressure on, I've got to ask them this so I can close the deal, well, they're going to feel it, you're going to feel it, and ultimately the deal is not going to get closed. Or if it does by chance get closed, it's going to be a horrible experience for all involved, right? But when you think about selling, the goal is that we all both have a win-win, and that the customer experience in the process is really what you're trying to control and make it a positive experience. Because at the end of the day, it's your brand, your product, your service that you want them to tell their friends about.
Yeah, and it sounds to me you become less of a salesperson than somebody who's almost more of mentoring them in a certain way. I don't know if mentoring is the right word or a guide. I've got this great product or service, and I really, you know, I feel like it's going to help you. Like, you have to be engaged as a human being with another human being. At the end of the day, that's what it is. You're humans dealing with humans. And that's very complicated, because humans have all different things going on in their lives. You know, we could have had a crappy day, you know, or we have something coming up that's putting a lot of pressure or a lot of stress. So we're all having to develop these relationships, and it's really, you know, that is at the end of the day, it's about that relationship that you're developing with that prospective client.
Absolutely. I like to call it, you are sitting there as an expert advisor, right? Because you know, an expert advisor, you know a lot about your product or your service or your industry, and the buyer has agreed to meet with you or may have even, you know, proactively sought you out to meet with you because they have a need. And so the job of the salesperson is not to manipulate or push or, you know, shove down someone's throat your product or service. The job of the salesperson is to go, you know, be about the buyer in front of them, ask them questions, listen intently, and then give your expert opinion, because you are the expert in the industry, as to what a good solution would be to solve that buyer's problem. That solution hopefully is your product or service, but sometimes, you know what, sometimes that solution may not be your product or service, right? So you have to have a healthy detachment when having the conversation with anyone, because to your point, Phyllis, at the end of the day, sales is about relationships. And when you think of the buyer in today's day and age with technology and the internet, 87% of all buyers will have looked into your product. They would have scanned your website. They would have, you know, received marketing material, whether it's, you know, downloaded it from your website. But they are extremely savvy. The buyer in today's day and age is very knowledgeable. And so when we as salespeople finally get the opportunity to speak with them, whether it be face-to-face, in person, or, you know, via email or what have you, we have to make sure that we ourselves are adding value, because everybody's time is busy, and we're all, you know, in today's society, we're all kind of crunched for time. So the best way that salespeople can add value is through their questioning and through their listening and through their offering up a solution. Because if we don't add value that way, then we are nothing more than a walking, talking website. And that's why the question of so what is so powerful, because if you don't discipline yourself to always be asking yourself, so what, so what? Why am I telling them about this feature and benefit? Does it matter to them? Versus what you think they should care about. And that's really what a website is, right? Marketing collateral, website. We're just listing out our features and benefits and value proposition because we think that this is what you should care about, and therefore we're trying to do a one-size-fits-all. So that's what we're putting and hyping up on our website. But where a salesperson adds value is to not be the walking, talking website, right? We add the value by coming in, asking questions, listening, actively listening intently, and then offering up a solution. And that may be, it may have nothing to do with what's on your website. And so we just have to be respectful of people's time, knowing that the average buyer, just like you and I, they're so busy, so swamped, so many things going on, that I want their experience with me as a seller to be one of those that they brag about, right? This person listened, they understood what it was I needed, they offered me up a solution based on what made the most sense, based on what I told them. And so the experience was fantastic, and therefore, you know, I bought as well, and you know, everybody wins, right? We're in a win-win, we're seeking a win-win relationship here. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's absolutely brilliant. We got to take a quick break, and when we come back, so here's the deal. So now you know how to hook your prospect into a conversation, and I don't mean that. Ooh, that sounds kind of. When I say that, it almost sounds yucky. It sounds like salesy. But the truth is you do. You engage in a conversation. It's about the relationship. But now that you've developed this relationship, you get along, you're real good friends now. Now the key is how to ask for the sale. So when we come back, that is the clincher. Stephanie Chung is going to tell us about the process, the strategy behind asking for the sale, right after this short break.
Hi, this is Steve Gibb, the host of Thriving Entrepreneur. You can listen to us Tuesdays, noon Eastern, on the EWN Radio Network. I want you to know you are uniquely brilliant, created for a purpose. The world needs you, and we want to help. Listen to me and my guest Tuesdays, noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, on the EWN Radio Network as we help you learn how you can be a thriving entrepreneur.
You're listening to Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
And welcome back. I'm so glad that you are here with us today. I have this incredible guest who is just the queen of sales, and she just knows so much. This woman has sold jets, and some of her clients that she works with as a business and executive coach include United Airlines, Disney, NetJets, Learjet. She knows what she's talking about, and we just went over some of the basic principles about meeting with your client and about the conversation you have with that client, and it really is all about active listening. Active listening meaning you're really listening. You are developing a relationship with that client. So now, Stephanie, you've developed this relationship with the client. They love you to death. You feel so good about this. So now let's talk about how you ask for the sale. So, I contend that, in order to ask for the sale, you first have to have a healthy relationship with money. That's my thought. What do you think about that?
Oh, my gosh. That is so true. The one thing that I would say is that, we are a product of our environment, right? And so as sales professionals, what we have to always remember is that our financial belief has absolutely no place in any conversation we're having with the buyer. And so let me elaborate on that just a second. If you were born, and let's say you were born into a wealthy family, well, your perspective of money may be different than, say, someone who was born into a less fortunate family. And so, therefore, because we don't know our buyers, they also come with their, they're a product of their environment, right? So we don't know their relationship with money. We don't know, nor is it that important. But what's really important is that we don't put our belief of money and our financial belief of money into the conversation, because at the end of the day, that then becomes you talking about you versus you being about the buyer in front of you. And so nowhere at any time is it ever acceptable for a salesperson to put their financial beliefs into the conversation. And, I had to learn that real quick when I moved from selling commercial airlines. I worked for US Air, I worked for Delta, all in a sales capacity. And so let's say your average ticket was, an airline, I may be selling tickets that are worth, $200, $300, right? Then when I was recruited into private aviation, well, that same trip may cost $7,000, $10,000, $20,000, same distance, same trip, same flight time. I mean, it's the same exact, whether regardless of the type of plane you're flying on, the distance is the exact same. And very quickly, I had to learn that if you're going to pay $7,000 for something that you could pay $200 for, right? it doesn't matter what my belief is. It doesn't matter what I think about that concept. What only matters is the person in front of me. What does the buyer care about? So absolutely, financial belief, you have to have, as a salesperson, you have to have a healthy relationship about money. And if for some reason you don't, that's okay. You just have to make sure that you don't bring your belief and your feelings into the equation. I can't tell you, Phyllis, how many times I've gone, retail stores do this, which is, it's like almost a sin at this point, right? But retailers do this all the time. When you walk into the store, they may actually downplay, this is going to go on sale next week, so that's a nice gesture. And certainly I appreciate it as a buyer, but there's something to be said for, you don't know enough about, am I going to be here next week? Do I even live here? so many pieces to that equation that instead of them bringing in their financial belief, right? I've had salespeople literally, depending on the store and the brand that you're at, they may say, oh my gosh, look at this purse. Who would spend this much money for a purse? And I'm thinking, wow, right? And so though they may be 100% right or what have you, but it really doesn't matter. And so when we, especially if you own your own business or if you're in a service type of industry, you have to really be careful on what you may say or what you may exhibit in the sense of what your financial beliefs are, because nowhere at any point is it ever acceptable for it to be part of a sales conversation.
Well, and especially if you're in the service business, like say you're a coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
So many of our EMN network members are coaches. If they don't, I think that also comes down to self-worth. You know, if you don't think you're worth asking, a certain amount, if you don't think you're worth it, then you don't think people are going to want to pay for your services. And so that mindset that you're talking about is so critical for everyone, but in particular if you're selling yourself, if you're the one that is you're the coach or you're the one who you're selling.
Absolutely. You know, right before I jumped on this call, Phyllis, to do this particular broadcast, I had a call from a company that wanted to talk to me about coming in and doing some sales coaching, some coaching for their folks. They're having that you want to do more with team building and morale and leadership training and things of that nature. And so as we were talking, I do this all the time because I do know my worth, and I do know if you work with me what the results are that you can expect. And I said to them, I said, let me just be honest with you. I am expensive compared to what you're used to, but I'm very good. I'm better than what you're used to. And then from there I went into the explanation. And I say that because I feel very comfortable and confident knowing that if you work with me, what you can expect. And the truth of the matter is every single person who's in a service industry, you should yourself feel 100%, feeling like this is what I know that I can deliver, because you're in a service business, you've probably got your own business, or perhaps you're even selling a product, but you have to believe as the salesperson that this is one of the best products, or you do provide the best service out there. Because if you don't believe it, you're never going to get anybody else convinced as well, nor should they be. Right? Why would they believe that you're good if you don't believe that you're good, right?
Right.
We could do a whole show on self-worth and how it attaches itself with your financial belief or, just how you carry yourself as well. And we women, there's a whole science behind how we command a room or don't command a room, right? So there's a lot of different things that go into that. But again, that's a whole different session that we could talk about.
And I'm going to have you back on, and we're going to talk about that for sure for an entire show. One more thing before we end. You have a great story about an experience you had about asking for the sale. So, that will really encapsulate what it is. How to ask for the sale and when to ask for the sale. So tell us about that story.
Oh, sure. So this was when I first newly got recruited into the private aviation sector, and I had gone and a gentleman had called and wanted me to come over and talk about the product that we had. And it happened to be a brand new product that we were launching. So I went to his home in Palm Beach, and we sat there and we, talked and had a lot of discussion about what his needs were and what he was looking for and where he would need the aircraft to go and the different cities and everything. So we had a great conversation. I felt very comfortable that I knew exactly what it is that he needed. And beyond that, I was able to offer him a solution that would fit perfectly with based on his needs. So he was a very pleasant gentleman, and I ended up being in this sales call for 3 hours. It was the longest sales call I think I've ever experienced, right? And because he was very engaging and just very, he was quite talkative, and you put him and myself together, and we're, chatty Cathy's, right? We just kept going and going. But I remembered as it was time for me to leave, and we were walking together towards the door, I thought to myself, I have been here for three long hours. I mean, this could have been an hour-long conversation at best. But, it's been 3 hours of my time, right? And, yes, we had a great conversation. Yes, I do understand what he needs and so on and so forth. But I'm walking out of here without a sale. And that's not going to happen, right? I've been here 3 hours. So on my way out to the door, I said to him, I said, I would just say his name was Mr. C. I said, Mr. C, may I ask you a question? And he said, sure. And I said, you and I have talked about what it is that you need. I've offered you up a solution that you said was very helpful and would absolutely satisfy the need that you had based on the cities that you're traveling to, et cetera. And so may I ask, is there any reason why I couldn't ask for your business today? And there was silence, and he looked, and he smiled, and he said, I was wondering how long it was going to take you to ask for the business. You can absolutely have my business. Send me the contract. I'll send it today. We shook hands. We laughed. And, you know, I went on about my way, of course, much happier because I had a closed deal. But, but the whole point of that story is, you know, I was brand new into private aviation. And, you know, I just thought to myself, this is crazy. I've been here a very long time. And that goes back, honestly, Phyllis, to also you valuing your own time as a sales professional. Because time spent in one area is time away from something else. So though, you know, in my head, I was like, okay, I've been here 3 hours, so which was 2 hours more than I needed to be. And so for 2 hours, I wasn't able to do something else, right? I was sitting here listening to all of his stories, and though they were great, but nevertheless, it was 3 hours of his time and mine. And so I have every right at this point to ask for the sale. I have, you know, listened to him intently. I've understood what he needed. I offered up a solution. And there does come a point where you have every right, you've earned it, to ask for the sale. And so that's what I did, and I loved his response because his response, this gentleman was a huge, he owned many car dealerships in the U.S. and abroad, and, you know, he's used to sales, right? And when he said to me, I was wondering how long it was going to take you to ask me, that was a good aha moment for me and changed my selling career moving forward. And that was years ago, but it was something that I always still hold with me till this day.
And I love that. And the optimum word here, I think, is you've earned that word earned. You've earned the right to ask for the sale. And that, again, is coming down to self-worth. What is your time worth? You have gone over everything. They think you're fabulous. And, you know, so what is the reason, you know, for you've earned it. You can ask for it. They might say no. They might put you off, you know, and say, well, yes, but I got to talk to five other people. But you do have the right to earn, and you've earned that right. And I love that word. I think that's so important. We have run out of time. We can talk forever, and I will have you back on again, Stephanie. If people want to contact you, they can visit your website at CoachStephanieChung.com. That's Coach Stephanie, Stephanie Chung, Chung.com. Thank you so much for your words of wisdom and your experience and your knowledge. And I think just from this alone, I'm hoping that people use your advice and make a shift in knowing how to ask for the sale, knowing their self-worth, and just understanding that it's also all about the client. When you're in meeting with a client, it's about developing a relationship, and if it's an active listening and knowing how to ask the questions, which is all part of listening actively and truly caring about your client and their needs.
Absolutely. Well, I really thank you so much for your time, Phyllis. This was fun. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. One of my mottos for business owners is, you can't do it alone. Whether you're in the startup stage of your business or you're scaling, you can't grow without relationships to provide support, wisdom, and new customers. eWomen Network is your home to connect with other women entrepreneurs who have been where you are or are experiencing the same challenges. We have chapters across the U.S. and Canada that have monthly events featuring our trademarked process called accelerated networking to ensure you get the contacts, resources, and leads you need to grow your business. And once you become a member, you get many benefits, including 2 one-on-one coaching sessions, unlimited access to our membership database, your own personal profile page, and discounts on products and services with our business partners such as UPS and American Express Open. Join the eWomen Network community and let us help you live your dream. For details, visit eWomenNetwork.com.
Hey, Phyllis Smith here. Thanks for listening to Close Up today. And don't forget to visit EWNRadioNetwork.com and check out some of my other shows, as well as shows from other fabulous hosts that span topics from business to health to grief recovery. See you soon.
This is the EWN Radio Network.